Hi, my name is Jeffrey Gittimer. You may know me as the author of The Little Red Book of Selling, or The Little Gold Book of Yes Attitude, a bunch of other books. But what you don't know is I'm coming to Dallas to do a live event. And there's a reason. The economy right now is booming and your sales are up. And you may erroneously think that you had something to do with it. I'm not coming to Dallas to tell you how to have your best year ever. I'm coming to Dallas to tell you how to have your best decade ever. Invest a few bucks in yourself. The dividends will last a lifetime. Hope to see you there.
However, no matter how bromide you are, there is a competitor that's going to pop up every once in a while that's going to kick your bromide. And if you want to look at it
right out, in the Alka-Seltzer.
Exactly. Right in the Alka-Seltzer. Where do we start this? An answer doesn't matter. We're having a good time. Right.
He couldn't wait to get in here.
You need sales balls to make sales calls.
I'm tweeting that puppy.
Okay.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to Sell or Die, the world's premier podcast for sales and personal development. My name is Jeffrey Gittimer. I wrote The Little Red Book of Selling, and I'm joined with...
I'm Jen Gluckow, founder of Sales in a New York Minute. What's up, everybody? Hey, hey, hey.
I'm joined with and I'm joined by, I should say. And we have an amazing show today. We have the great Bob Berg with us, and he is the go-giver. Bob is renowned as a person who extols the virtue of giving. You give a lot, don't you, Jen?
I do. I love giving.
I love giving.
I
give blood, but I don't know. I give it to my doctor, and he comes back with my PSA report.
So anyway, Bob is going to give us some really great strategies for networking and meeting people and giving. But before we get into that, let's talk about what's going on.
Cool. Well, I'm going on. We just had the hurricane, and now things have calmed down. I went to the store yesterday and found water on the shelves. That was pretty interesting. And there's bread. But I think that we tend to, as a society, panic a little bit way too much with respect to the whole element of what's coming versus what is. The threat of war moves armies, but the actual war actually creates who wins or loses, or the actual battle creates who wins and who loses. And I'm in sales, people are scared to death to get into that meeting, and then once they get in there, they have to fight their way to a victory. Mm. Or sometimes I would rather say ask their way to a victory. That seems to be the best method of doing it, because if you talk about yourself, someone's already Googled you, and they already know those answers.
Well, speaking of asking and giving, it's our turn to ask you to give us a 5-star review on iTunes. But let me give you something that someone has said recently. Neod, N-E-O-D-D, so Neod. That's interesting. Neod writes, Sell or Die has become the go-to podcast for my commute. They provide relevant and actionable information that can help everyone in sales. Whether you have been in sales for 10 days or 10 years, there is always something to be learned, and this is where you can learn it. Along with providing sales red meat, they have fantastic guests who provide fantastic insight from a variety of positions, industries, and backgrounds. Plus, they have great book suggestions as well. It's entertaining, and you might learn a thing or two.
So, thank you very much.
I love that. Thank you for giving us that amazing 5-star review. Do you think it's any odd? Any odd. Knee odd. How would you say that?
I'm not even attempting this one.
Yeah, I don't. But anyway, any odd or knee odd, we really appreciate that review. And thank you so much.
We're getting a lot of fun. We're getting so many 5-star reviews, we may have to read two each episode.
The reviews really, really help us. They inspire us to keep doing this show 5 days a week, and they help us get found by more people and get you better guests. So thank you so much.
You know, I've been friends with Bob Berg for probably 25 years. I have pictures of me and Bob Berg with hair. That's how long I've been a friend of his. And he has been consistent over the years with his philosophy and his strategy of be a giver.
Mm-hmm.
I personally have a philosophy about it. I give because I want to give, not because I'm guilted into giving. You, Jen?
Oh, I love giving. I really genuinely do it. It makes me feel good on the inside.
Right.
So I love giving.
But think about holidays and think about Christmas where you have to give a gift, but you don't really – it's kind of an obligatory gift rather than a, man, I can't wait to get Mary this or I can't wait to get Bill this, whatever it is. And what I do when I have an obligatory gift is I try to give them something that I would want to get. Mm. And so it makes me feel a little bit better, like, hey, this is if they don't want it, I'll take it back.
Yeah.
And I'll take it to my house.
Yeah. The cool thing about Bob's interview is he talks a lot about giving more value. And a lot of our salespeople and diehards out there, I know you struggle with how to give more value. And mm-hmm. that's not always the easiest thing. Even if you want to give value, how do you do it? And so Bob goes into detail about that, which is going to be great.
Yeah, but let me give you a hint.
Yeah.
If you're using value add or added value, drop that from your lexicon because what it means or implies is you have to buy something from me to get the value. Yeah. I'm about giving value in advance of the purchase. And that way the customer actually feels good about what you're trying to do. An example of that would be an article or something that you have posted that helps the other person with their career or with their job or with their situation, and they feel good about the fact that you are a value provider, and then you do that on a consistent basis so that when you get in front of them, they actually want to listen to you.
Talking about giving, we just got this amazing text. We're on this group message with your daughter, Erica, and the rescue that she volunteers at. Last night, the entire kennel burnt down, and it was horrific. I mean, the pictures were just devastating, and you know,
many animals lost their lives. Many were saved,
yep,
but many lost their lives.
I think out of the 70 dogs they were housing, 5 have passed, and 8 are still missing, and the rest have been found. And you know, this lady Gina has dedicated her life mm-hmm. to saving these animals that people don't want to bring home. And so this text that we just got from Erica, which is pretty cool, says that someone texted them that they want to donate $50,000 to the rebuild.
Wow.
Now that's giving.
Yeah, that's amazing giving.
Yeah,
and you know, people feel bad and people recognize that the animal shelters of the world now have become literally a focal point for get your dog, get a rescue dog, get an unnamed cat, whatever the animal is. There's been a tremendous amount of that. And I talk to a lot of people and I'll say, what kind of a dog is that? And they'll say it's a rescue.
Right.
Like that's
no idea.
A brand or the breed of a dog. But I think more important than that is this is a chance to feel good about giving to someone who cares.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, so Erica immediately, well, not immediately, but before she went to bed last night, created a funding page where people could help support because there were thousands of people commenting on her Facebook mm-hmm. about where they could give money or help or donate time, that kind of thing. And just in a matter of hours last night, she raised $30,000.
Wow.
Not even including the $50,000 that someone else wants to donate. So,
wow.
You know, they're going to get hundreds of thousands of dollars and they'll need it. To rebuild. I mean, they lost everything.
So giving with charity or giving with value all embodies the word giving. And I think that we have to look at it, break it down, understand it. And Bob Berg is going to help us do that. Can I give a plug for my upcoming seminars before we
get Yeah, in? But I just wanted to say, like, if you want to donate to the cause – we'll put the link in the show notes. It's
cool.
Gina Chapman's, it's Chapman's Dachs and Rescue, and we'll put the link in there. I think that sometimes fundraisers or nonprofit workers are sometimes the best salespeople on the planet because they're not actually trying to sell.
Right,
they're trying to help.
They're
so passionate about what they do. And the question for you diehards is, does that passion come off in what you're doing?
Yeah.
You know, how much can you transfer that same passion that these people who help rescue dogs are transferring to get other people to donate?
They don't brag about their passion. They show it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a genuine way of convincing other people. They're not on the air going, I've been doing this for 25 years. None of that crap.
They've
done it for 25 years because they believe in what they're doing. And I'm challenging every diehard, every salesperson, is your value transferable without you having to talk about it,
mm-hmm.
without you having to brag about it? Can you actually convince a potential customer to buy what it is that you're trying to convey to them, whether it's a product or a service or a subscription or whatever it is, based on your value, not based on your brag?
Yeah.
Do you want to introduce
Let's Bob? Get into it. It's time to sell or die with Bob Berg.
Bob Berg is the co-author of The Go-Giver Influencer with John David Mann and is named by the American Management Association as one of the 30 most influential leaders. Bob believes that the amount of money one makes is directly proportional to how many people one serves. He also is the host of the Go-Giver podcast, Diehards. Say hello to Bob Berg. So, hello,
Hi, Bob. Welcome.
Hello, everyone.
Do you know, and I have to self-plug this for just 1 second. The next book that comes out for me, October 30th, will be the Napoleon Hill First Writings book called Truthful Living. Ooh. And it is exactly what Napoleon Hill has preached 100 years ago, and it's still valid today. And Bob is probably one of the best examples of it in America, maybe in the world.
Wow. Thank you.
Yeah, it's a pleasure. We'll send you a copy of the we have the preview galley copy of the Truthful Living book. You will love it. And you'll.
I hope you'll come on the podcast and talk about it so we can get that promoted out there.
I will gladly do that.
So, Bob, let's talk about you and the Go-Giver concept.
Talk about us.
No.
The hell with Bob.
How did you and John.
Enough about me already, though.
Enough about Bob. Now let's get back to us.
All right. How did you and John come up with the Go-Giver concept?
Well, years and years ago, I had a book called Endless Referrals, Network Your Everyday Contacts into Sales.
I own an autographed copy of it.
Yes, you do. I've seen
it. You're in it. Actually, in the 2005 edition, the third edition, you're in there as one of the sales examples that I point people to. And it was a how-to book, though. You know, and it did well. It sold about 300,000 copies or so, and it's been a good ride. But it was very how-to-ish, and And throughout the years, I've always enjoyed reading parables. Have always enjoyed feeling like you could connect with the story and really get something out of it. And I thought, wouldn't it be a cool idea if we could take the basic premise of endless referrals, which basically is that all things being equal or even close enough to equal, people will do business with and refer business to those people they know, like, and trust, and put that into a parable form. So I asked myself the question, in choosing a title, which we know is important, what is the main characteristic of a person who's able to cultivate those kind of relationships both quickly and sustainably? And the answer is they're always giving value to others. Their focus is on bringing value to others. So we came up with the name The Go-Giver, which a lot of people think is opposite of a go-getter, but it really isn't, because we love go-getters too, because go-getters are people who take action.
You know, The Go-Getter is a book from the 20s, right?
You know something? I found that out. Oh, The Go-Getter. Well, yeah. The Go by Peter Kind. Oh, that was a great book. I love that book. Yeah. And but there was also one that I think called The Go-Giver, which was written like even before then. I felt embarrassed because I wouldn't have.
Don't worry about it.
Oh, that's okay.
Embarrassment has nothing to do with solid using other people's ideas to get it to the next level. There's nothing wrong with that.
Their book, it was called The Go-Giver, but it was like something totally. Kind of totally different.
It was about tithing or something.
And so we love go-getters, okay? And so we want people to be go-getters, people of action, and go-givers, people who are focused on creating value for others, for the marketplace. What we don't want is for people to be go-takers. Those are the people. And I think that's what Napoleon Hill was really referring to.
Exactly.
The day of the go-getter. He really meant the day of the go-taker, because he's all about being a giver.
I will tell you, it's remarkable how Truthful Living is going to ring with you.
Oh, for sure.
Because it's all about you earn in proportion to what you give. You earn in proportion to what you serve. You earn in proportion to what you put into something. You get exactly out of it what you put into it.
So I classify people as either givers and takers all the time, whether I should or shouldn't. I just – it's like so natural to me to think about it. Do you think people are born as givers, or do you think it's something that they learn over time?
You know, I think like anything else, there it's a combination of such. It's like any great athlete. You know, they were born with natural talent and ability, gross motor and small motor control, sure. But unless they're in the batting cage practicing, they're not going to be as good a hitter.
Totally 100%
so
agree.
So what would you say to someone who wants to be a giver but doesn't really know where to start?
Well, first, and I think it's more than just being a giver, because it's focusing on, you know, we would say the basic premise of the Go Giver, Jen, is simply that shifting your focus, and this is the key, shifting your focus from getting to giving. Again, when we say giving in this context, we simply mean constantly and consistently providing value to others, and understanding that doing so is not only a pleasant way of conducting business, it's the most financially profitable way as well. Okay. So I think that a person, yes, they want to focus on being a giver, but they also remember law five of that story is the law of receptivity. We've also got to be able to receive that which we've earned through providing value to the marketplace. This is why we say that money is simply an echo of value. And so I think for someone to then, you know, to say, okay, well, I'm going to move to this kind of way of being and way of conducting myself, way of selling, they need to first understand why it's in their best interest to do so. Again, if they're not someone who has a natural inclination to doing so. So, for example, you know, a lot of times I'll say to my audience, how many of you agree with the following statement? Nobody is going to buy from you because you have a quota to meet. Right? And we all laugh because we know that's true. They're not going to buy from you because you have a quota to meet, because you need the money, or even because you're a really, really nice person.
Right, exactly.
They're going to buy from you because they believe they'll be better off by doing so than by not doing so. And in a free market-based economy, which is what we live in, free market simply meaning no one is forced to do business with one another, that's the only reason why they should buy from you. What this does, which is great, is it makes it so the entrepreneur or the sales professional needs to place the interests of the other person first, not in a self-sacrificial way, not in a martyrish or doormatty way, no, but as a way of understanding that you're tapping into human nature. We need to be the one that communicates that value to that person. So once someone understands this, now they're much more likely to take that on.
That makes sense. Now, you just mentioned one of the five laws from your book. Can you talk through the other four laws?
So the first one is the law of value. And, you know, and of course, in every one of Jeffrey's books, and I'm pretty sure I've read them all, starting with the Sales Bible, and through all the different colors of the books, you talk about value. Okay. I mean, correct. Because really, when it comes down to that, that's what it really is all about. So the law of value says your true worth in the business sense is determined by how much more you give in value than you take in payment. Now, when someone first hears this, it might sound counterintuitive, maybe even counterproductive. Give more in value than I take in payment? I mean, aren't I going to go broke? Isn't that a recipe for bankruptcy? And of course, the answer is no, but why? Well, we simply have to understand the difference between price and value. Price is a dollar figure. It's a dollar amount. It's finite. It is what it is. Value, on the other hand, is the relative worth or desirability of a thing, of something, to the end user or beholder. In other words, what is it about this thing, this product, service, concept, idea, what have you, that brings so much worth or value to someone that they will willingly, free market again, willingly exchange their money for this and be ecstatic that they did, while you make a very healthy profit?
So let me paraphrase that. It's the price of something versus the pricelessness of something.
Ooh, I like that.
And that way you can perceive it, even though it's a MasterCard commercial takeoff, it's still something that people can understand. If you're only focused on price versus priceless, then you're going to have to compete against somebody for a nickel. If you're going to focus on price less, then you compete on value. And the value provider will always win.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I always say, unless your last name is Walmart, trying to make low price your unique
selling proposition. Well, Amazon might have an argument with that.
Oh, right. Yeah. Or Amazon. That's true, too, actually. Yeah.
But you date yourself. You know what I mean?
Right. Wait. Exactly. Yes.
No offense.
No, for you're absolutely correct. For most of us, though, that's not a field we should be playing on or want to or need to be playing on. So what we need to do is, especially in today's world where technology really has leveled off the playing field, and most products and services are good, and we know that if a prospective customer can't see a significant difference between any two or more products or services, they're always going to go with lower price. Mm-hmm. That's why we need to focus, as you said, on being that value provider. When you sell on price, you're a commodity.
And someone else, a nickel cheaper, is going to take the price. Is going to take the deal away from you.
Exactly. Yeah. If you sell on low price, you're going to lose the sale on low price. Yeah. There's not going to be loyalty. You're going to be looked at as a commodity, not a resource. Mm-hmm. Sure.
And I will tell you that. And you are you a Prime member?
Yeah.
Okay. So you go into Barnes & Noble, and you see a book that you want, and you immediately go to Amazon to see what the Prime price is.
Well, you know, it's funny. Tom Peters, in Search of Excellence, and his last book, The Excellence Dividend, which is a wonderful, wonderful book. He was tweeting the other day that he went into Amazon. He picked up like 10 books, and it was so long at the checkout line, he got disgusted, put the books back, ordered them on Amazon. And he was actually going to order them right from Barnes & Noble.
Oh, wow. Wow. You can actually scan, if you have the Amazon app, you can just scan the books now yourself and they get added to your cart. It's so crazy.
It's nuts. It's not, their technology is nuts. And you know that Barnes & Noble has had the opportunity to use their online store for more than 10 years in their stores and refuses to do so because either they're stupid or backwards or both.
You know, I never understood their reasoning or their lack of reasoning. It was always a mystery to me.
They're out of a book in the store and they say, well, we'll order it for you and you can come in 3 days and get it. Like, seriously? I can sit on my ass and for $5 cheaper, I can have it delivered to my door tomorrow.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And they haven't figured, I don't understand how they anyway.
Well, they lost the go-giver concept, that's for sure.
They lost the common sense. Is common sense one of the five?
Yeah, I think hopefully it permeates them. But without that common sense, you know, a lot of times, too, you get these the very big old companies who had many, many years of success doing what they were doing. And it's almost like it's a government bureaucracy in the private sector. Mm-hmm. They can be just as bad. You know, and so I think it has a lot to do with leadership or a lack of leadership. I the culture itself. So I don't know how they blew that opportunity, but they kind of did.
Yeah.
So here's my tweet for the day. Without common sense, you will likely lose dollars and cents.
I love it.
Hashtag Amazon, hashtag Barnes & Noble.
That should be part of a get bit, though, you know.
Yeah. But it's amazing to me how many people in today's world don't understand that by putting value in front of the things that they do, they could win much more in the approval rating on Mother Google or Yelp or TripAdvisor, and they still choose to count nickels.
Yeah, you know, human nature is an interesting thing. I'd say a funny thing, but it really isn't that funny.
No, it's not funny. And in my audiences, I'll say, well, how many of you are cheap bastards? And half the audience or more will raise their hand. And I know that those people are going to be in the loser category because they don't understand value. They're more worried about a nickel than they are about a dollar.
Hey, everybody, it's Jeff Bajorek from the Why and the Buy podcast, and September is all about customer loyalty on our show. Yes, it's important to go get new customers, but it's also vitally important to keep the ones you have. So all of our interviews and our Monday musings are going to surround this very important concept in business. So tune into the Why and the Buy podcast, because when you know your whys, your hows and your whats get much better.
So talk to us a little bit more. Did you actually come up with the Go Giver philosophy, and then you called in a writer guy, or how did that come about?
Well, the title I came up with, and the basic, very very basic idea. But as I began to write the very first page of this parable, mm-hmm. I realized that there's a big difference between writing a how-to book and writing a parable.
Agreed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so I knew I couldn't do it justice as I thought it should. Fortunately, I knew of John David Mann. He was the editor-in-chief of a magazine I used to write for, and he is just absolutely brilliant. And at that time, very few people knew of John because he was very much in a particular niche. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, you go into a bookstore or online or off, and there's tons of books where he's either the ghostwriter or the co-author and best-selling books. Back then, though, very few people knew him. Fortunately, I did, mm-hmm. and I knew how brilliant he was. So I asked him, and when I say asked, I mean pleaded with him, right. to be the co-author and lead writer of this story. And he was on his way at the time to Hollywood to be a screenwriter. And he's one of these guys. He could pop out shows every, I don't know how they do it. But he talked with his then fiance, now his lovely wife, Anna, and said, you know, how can I not at least listen to Bob's idea, though? It's Bob. You know, I know him. I like him. I trust him. And so they were over visiting her mom in Tampa at the time. They drove across state. We had about a 3-hour dinner and at Jetty's, actually. We were talking about Jetty's earlier. Yeah. And just talked about our thoughts about what the book could be and so forth. And about 3 weeks later, he called me and said, you know, I think this is going to work. And so we did. And he always tells people I ruined his Hollywood career.
Oh, perfect. Yeah. But meanwhile, you ruined his career, but every 6 months you send him a check. So now the Go Giver has all kinds of subtitles, correct? The Go Giver goes to Hollywood. The Go Giver gets a hernia operation. How many different offshoots of the book are there now?
There are four altogether. Three of them are parables. The last one that just came out a few months ago is the Go Giver Influencer. Mm-hmm. But so there's four altogether.
Cool.
It's a great concept because not enough people understand the value in giving.
I think a lot of people struggle with how to give value and how do I add value without costing myself too much money or time. Yeah. And I'd love to hear your take on the answer to that, Bob.
Yeah. And again, what we need to be that additional value. We need to communicate. Sort of like, remember Caddyshack, be the ball, Danny. Danny, mm-hmm. be the ball. Same thing. And so how do we do that? Well, there are probably dozens, if not hundreds of ways to communicate that additional value. But they tend to come down to five what we call elements of value.
Cool.
And they are excellence, consistency, attention, empathy, and appreciation. And to the degree that we can communicate one or more of those, hopefully five. And I mean, when I say we, I mean everyone in our company. Whenever there's at every single touch point from the time we first meet someone or that first call comes in or all the way through the relationship building to the sales, through the sales process, to the referrals, that's the degree that we take our competition and price out of the conversation.
So can you go to our diehards were writing like hell when you went through those five.
Yeah, things. Those were awesome. Say them again.
Can you please do that again?
Sure. Excellence, consistency, attention, empathy, and appreciation.
Cool.
And we can get into some of those if you want.
Yeah, let's do it. Diehards.
Yeah,
this is
I was
major.
Thinking about the feel good factor.
Yeah, well, that has to do with excellence because excellence is two parts. Excellence first is simply competence. Mm-hmm. It's doing well what you're supposed to be doing. Mm-hmm. If you're in sales, it means you're studying. You understand the product or service. You understand the process. You understand the support people and what they're doing to support you. It means you're reading books and you're listening and you're right doing all those things. That's the first part. Now, you know, Joe Calloway talks about that in his book, Be the Best at What Matters Most. Mm-hmm. He says to me, wow experiences are simply people doing correctly what they're supposed to be doing. And so there's something to be said about that. But here's the other part of excellence. And you just touched on it. How do you make people feel? How do people feel about you, about themselves, and about the situation. You know, we think about, and it's really so easy to do. And Jen, when you bring up not costing you money, when you go into, let's say, a Ritz-Carlton, right? And we all know this story because we've all been there and we've seen this happening.
Can I place you on a brief hold? I've had that all the time.
The you're greeted by a guest contact employee. They never say hi, hey, or how you do, and it's always good morning, good afternoon, or good evening. When you ask them a question and they answer, you thank them. They never say no problem. They don't even say you're welcome. They say my pleasure.
Yeah.
Okay. Now that's fine, but the question might be okay. That's the Ritz-Carlton. I mean, they've got all this money to invest in the train. You know what? Any other hotel, motel, big corporate, privately owned, could do the same thing. Mm-hmm. The Marriott, the Westin, the Hyatt, all great properties. And sometimes they do that and other times they don't.
Right. It's consistency with Ritz-Carlton. I agree.
Yeah. Super 8 hotels could do it. Motel 6, where Tom Baudet leaves the lights on for us.
Yeah.
They could do it. And so could Dave and Mary and their team of three people at Dave and Mary's.
I totally can. Just by the way, we were in Geneva, not to give a throwaway line, staying at a Ritz-Carlton, and they said mon plaisir.
Yeah, avec plaisir.
I love
it's
that.
Great. Yeah. It's great. You feel so good. Like, wow.
Even in their language, they'll say mon plaisir.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's totally cool. Yeah. So they're consistent across language lines and language barriers as well.
Yeah. And you know, so when you make people feel good, you know, because that Dave and Mary, when they say my pleasure, and people say, well, they're not going to take market share away from Ritz-Carlton. Of course they're not. But they're going to own their targeted demographic.
Oh, yeah.
Sure. And they'll probably take some market share from Motel 6 and maybe even Super 8.
They're also going to get reviews on TripAdvisor without begging for them.
Mm-hmm. Yes, 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 yes.
Yeah.
So true. So true.
So talk about one of the other elements. Now you got me really interested.
Well, you know, you look at something like consistency. Consistency is another one. We know why, and this is what do you call it when something's just so old? It's a bromide. When we talk about fast food, you know, franchises, the fast food franchises being so successful. Well, we know it's not because they have the best food. It's because they have the same food.
They ask the question, do you want fries with that every time, though? And that has sold billions and billions of orders of french fries.
Yeah, and you go into it, whether it's in Worcester, Massachusetts or La Jolla, California, it looks the same, it smells the same, the shake machine is in the same place and the whole thing. So consistency is very important because it's a very human need dating back to the cave person days when every day was literally, not figuratively, literally life and death. You had to know, you know, you had to make it through the day. So
you know what you're going to get.
Yeah.
However, no matter how... bromide you are, there is a competitor that was going to pop up every once in a while that's going to kick your bromide. And if you want to look at it
right in the Alka-Seltzer.
Exactly. Right in the Alka-Seltzer. And so if you look at In-N-Out Burger out west, they have kicked the bromide out of McDonald's. And the only difference between east and west right now is that the East Coast doesn't have In-N-Out Burger yet. But they will.
Yeah.
I think it's coming. But it's the same. That consistency concept holds true. You go to an In-N-Out Burger, you know what you're going to get.
Yeah.
You know how it's going to taste.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so whether we're following a leader or whether it's a salesperson or whether whomever, when we know what to expect, you know, because we've all seen these people who are one way one day and the next day they're totally different.
Mm-hmm.
And it's unnerving because it goes against human nature, our need for consistency, for that kind of sameness. We'd almost rather someone be a jerk 100% of the time because at least we know what we're getting, you know, with that person. So,
and I can name some of those companies. I think they're called airlines at the end of them.
Yeah, we won't mention any names, but it rhymes with Runited.
Yeah, exactly.
I think empathy is another real important one. You know, again, we say it, we hear the word empathy a lot. What does it really mean? Well, dictionary definition of empathy is the identification with or vicarious experiencing of another person's feelings. But here's the thing. we don't always know how another person feels. Mm. And sometimes to say, I understand how you feel, not only is it not bullshit. True, it sounds untrue.
I call bullshit on that more than any other thing. When somebody says, I understand how you feel, I go, no, you don't.
I understand how you feel, Jeffrey.
No, you don't. Well, you might.
But really, I do.
But, so I think what empathy really is, though, is it's being able to communicate either through what you say, how you say it, or just by how you show up, that you may not understand what they how they feel.
Let me bring an analogy into this that I think is germane. We have two dogs. They're Cavalier King Charles.
I heard that Bob's an animal lover.
Yeah, they're expensive little pets. But Charlie will come up in the bed and just
she has dog steps.
And just kind of hang out. And I don't ask her how she feels. I don't empathize with how Charlie feels. I just pat her on the head. And that's, I think, what a lot of people want. They just want that the feeling that you're going to be okay. It's okay. Mm-hmm. You don't have to say, I understand. Just make me feel good.
Exactly. She also knows when you need her or when I need her. She's very good at reading people.
So the challenge that you're giving your reader is not simply to try to placate the other person, but to actually try to give them some kind of an intangible value that says, hey, I get it. Don't worry about it. I'm going to try my best to help.
Exactly. Well, you know, you really hit it right on the head. It's like someone, for example, who's a mortgage broker or a mortgage banker or a lender, and they're talking to somebody, to someone who's trying to get a home loan. Well, they're asking all sorts of personal questions, and there's all sorts of rules and regulations and all these different things. Well, you know, empathy simply means understanding that this person, you know, doesn't do it every day like you do. So you're used to asking all these personal questions and so forth. Well, this person, this might be their only time buying a home or maybe one of two times, and you're a stranger to them and they may not. So I think empathy is, you know, you don't have to know exactly how they feel because you probably don't feel the same way about it. Mm-hmm. But again, like you said, just helping them to feel safe and comfortable and good.
I've said it in my seminars for years. It may be your thousandth time to say it, but it's my first time to hear it.
Exactly.
That's so true.
And so you look at it from the perspective of you want to make the other person feel like it's your first time to say it.
Oh, yeah.
And you're saying it with that same kind of enthusiasm or with that same directness of communication that someone can get it and agree with it and be okay with it.
Yeah. It's like Joe DiMaggio when asked why he plays so hard every game. He said, well, because somebody in the stands may not have seen me before. You know?
Yeah, it's true. It's true.
There are many, many athletes that can give those kinds of truths who love the game. So if you look at it from that perspective, do you love what you do? Mm-hmm. I think that helps with your empathy more than anything.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
So talk to us about the last element, which is appreciation.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's interesting because, you know, another bromide, right, is that attitude of gratitude. Yet you think about it, when you really live with gratitude, when your focus is on gratitude, which, by the way, does not mean that yucky things don't happen in life. Of course they do. And sometimes I have a little bit of an issue with the what I call the political correctness of the personal development movement, right?
Right. It's called the anti-bullshit program. I'm a member.
Yeah, it's like,
you're the president. It's like, you know, people say,
right, not everything is rainbows and unicorns. No, life is life. And then, but we can choose to have that attitude where we focus on gratitude. And when we truly have gratitude for this customer, this prospective customer or client, for the opportunity we have to serve them and to make a great living as a result of doing that, for the support people, for the person, it makes a difference. And people can sense when you are operating out of gratitude and when you appreciate them. It is absolutely a difference maker.
You know that every time I walk by a soldier or a cop, I thank them.
He does. True story.
I will run across the aisle and thank them.
Yeah, that's neat. That's great.
Even in France where
they're walking around with Tommy guns. And I have to say, monsieur, merci. And they're like, whoa.
They're very surprised. They're much more surprised there than here.
I agree.
I don't think they get a lot
However,
of appreciation.
Appreciation is not simply something that you show other people with gratitude. There are other ways to show appreciation. Bob and Jen and I know it by audience applause. At the end of our talk, sometimes people will appreciate us to a point where they'll stand up and say thanks by applauding, correct?
That's a wonderful feeling when that happens.
It's a wonderful feeling. And I think you have to look at it from the perspective of, are you willing to give it as much as you want to receive it?
Yeah.
I was in, do you know Randy Gage?
A great friend of mine.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So I'm in a breakout session with Randy Gage, and he's talking about selling products in the back of the room. And he holds up a cassette tape to just to date how long ago it was. He goes, now I sell these two cassette tapes for $2,000. And I stood up and I was a party of one and I gave him a standing ovation.
Oh, my God.
I mean, just think about the value of that and what he's trying to convey. He's conveying a message that says, my message has value. I sell it at a value price and people are willing to pay. And you can't put a price tag on that value.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot.
And he's a guy who really came from a very difficult upbringing background, certainly did not live a life of prosperity.
Nope.
And he studied that. And you talk about a guy who really made a decision and he began to study prosperity and to apply it. And he's a guy who, to say he's a prosperous human being, both financially and you know, mentally, emotionally, physically, and so forth, would be an understatement. So he's a guy, he gives great value to the marketplace and he will receive great value from the marketplace.
Agreed. And he's a funny guy.
Yeah.
He's cynical, but funny.
Yes.
Bob, if I was going to buy one of your books, one of the Go-Giver, do I start with the first one, the Go-Giver?
That's what I would suggest. Cool. Yeah, that because the stories, the three of them do, it's not that they have necessarily continuity in message because they're self-contained. You could start with any of them, but because they're set in the same fictional town and in the ensuing books, we have the different characters. Some of them make appearances. It's fun for the people reading it, I think even more so when they begin with the first one. But yes, you could read any of them. You just won't get some of the inside references, you start with.
Yeah, we need the inside stuff.
Oh, for sure.
I always want to start with number one. If you don't watch Family Guy from the first, you don't understand all of the nuances.
It's like reading Harry Potter from the sixth book.
Of Stewie. Now, I'm not a Harry Potter person. I apologize.
Is the dog the only one who understands him?
Yeah, exactly.
So, Bob, I just am dying to know what kind of animals are your favorite.
Oh.
Well, I love all animals. I just do.
You're in Florida. You must love those roaches.
There's like snakes.
Yeah, we call them palmetto bugs down here.
Right. Palmetto bugs.
And the motels brag and the apartment houses brag that our palmetto bugs don't fly.
Yeah, you know, I grew up, we always had dogs, usually a few at a time. So I think I have a real connection with dogs, you know, but I also love cats
I
love
the
all
dog
animals.
Whisperer.
So you have a dog and a cat or you have several?
No, right now I just have a cat, a shelter cat, Calvin, my little buddy.
Got it.
Yeah, cats are cool.
Cool.
And did you grow up in Florida or did you grow up someplace else?
No, I grew up in Massachusetts, but got down south as fast as I could.
Gotcha.
Yeah,
I'm a wimp. The cold weather, the warm weather suits my style.
Yeah.
So you've been there for a long, long time?
About 30 years, not to be
a New England Patriots fan?
No, you know, it's interesting. As soon as I moved to South Florida, I switched my allegiances, which was too bad because when I was growing up, the Patriots were awful and the Dolphins were fantastic. And
exactly.
We know how that worked out.
Yeah, didn't work out as well as could.
No.
So if we wanted to find a little bit more about Bob Berg, where would we go to be able to do that?
Well, as far as the books, I would just say thegogiver.com, without the hyphen, thegogiver.com. There's also berg.com, but that's more for the speaking and so forth. So
you own your last name.com?
Way to go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, I'm actually fairly old.
Yeah, me too. The minute they announced the internet, I bought Gittimer.com.
Yeah, I have Gluckett.com too.
Yeah, I think it's important to just have your last name because then your email address is bob@berg.com.
Bob@berg.com, exactly.
Yeah.
Because I'm Jeffrey at Gittimer.com and she's Jen@Glucko.com. But but she'll soon be Jen at Gittimer.com.
Ooh. Hey, Mazel Tov.
Thank you.
But the challenge for the audience, for the diehards that are listening today, is Bob is giving a message that will help you win. You may not perceive it as such because you may think as a giver that you have to give to the Heart Association or your religious affiliations, and that's tithing or just giving some away. And you may feel a little bit good about doing it, but there's not – you're not – I don't know. I don't want to downplay the value of giving away to a church.
No, it's a different thing. It's a different concept. You know, we love – charity is wonderful. We believe in it very much. But that's not really what we're talking about, you know,
You're talking about is giving something of value to someone else that can use it and benefit from it, profit from it, use it to build their success. All the things that you're looking at from a standpoint of becoming a person of value. When you are a go-giver, you become a person of value. You become a resource to the community, to your marketplace, and to your family. So I look at it. And this has been an absolutely freaking excellent interview.
Yeah, this has been awesome. Thank you for joining us, Bob.
On Sell or Die. And for those of you diehards out there, if you don't go buy the books, all of them right now, I'm coming to your house and I'm going to kick you into go-giver. Thanks, Bob. Diehards, you just got a lesson of a lifetime. You were given information. You have to go back and listen to this literally 10 times. Not only will it help our numbers, but it will but it will also help your understanding of the word value. Bob Berg not only gets it, he embodies it. And my question to you is, are you talking value or are you embodying value? And you can feel it in Bob Berg.
Mm-hmm. You can. And one of the things I really found interesting was his law of value. Give more in value than you take in payment. That's so profound because people just think, oh, I need to give value. I need to give added value. How do I give value? How do I give the best value? But they're not thinking about sort of measuring it in this term of here's what I'm charging you and I better deliver far more than what I am asking you to pay me.
In 1917, Napoleon Hill said, do more than you are expected to be paid for. And Bob Berg embodies that in his philosophy and his strategy. It probably started way before Napoleon Hill, but he's the one that I have penciled in my mind as the person who defined it for me to give more than you're expected to receive. And Bob is the essence of that in our society today. How do you feel about his 5 points?
The five elements of value?
Yeah.
So let's just review them. They were – I took notes. Excellence.
Yes.
Consistency.
Yes.
Attention.
Yes.
Empathy and appreciation.
And is there anything that strikes you? You know, that everyone, when they listen to words, they go, oh, yeah, that's me. I do this. He's creating thought in your mind. He's trying to make you think about who you are as a person and how you personify value.
I think like every good salesperson thinks about some of those things. But the question is, diehard, are you thinking about all five of those things and doing them consistently? And, you know, what I would do is write those five things down. Just press rewind if you need to hear them again. write those five things down and rate yourself. How good are you at actually providing value in terms of excellence, in terms of consistency, attention, empathy, appreciation?
Yeah.
Every single time you interact with a customer.
I combined two of them.
Okay.
Consistent excellency.
I think
consistent excellence. That's what I've done for 25 years, and that's what's brought me the law of attraction or the law of value attraction.
I think consistency should be like the 0.5, like you use the 0.5 as the glue, you know, because consistency really, in my opinion, should be woven throughout all of these things. If you give excellence, but you only give it part of the time and you're not consistent about it, well, that's crappy value. Okay. If you pay attention to your customers, but not consistently, again, not so good. But if you do these things with consistency, each and every one of them, empathy, show appreciation every single time, now you're giving value.
When Bob made the minor comment of no one buys from you because you have a quota, he gave you the insight that you need to understand what the hell it's going to take for you to gain the real attention of the buyer. That's what they're really – they're counting on the fact that you can convince them by virtue of the other things that you offer than your product.
And Jeffrey, you talk a lot about giving value, and Jennifer, you talk a lot about it as well on this show and in your books. I think the thing that this interview opened up for me is that it's not good enough to say, I'm going to give value to my prospects, to my customers. You have to, as Jeffrey said, embody these principles. You have to live these principles in your life to give value. And then it will be easy. You won't even have to think about giving value. If you are these things, if you are empathetic, if you are consistent, you will give value and you will get more customers.
Anyone who knows me personally knows that I perform one random act of kindness every day, whether it's hold the door for somebody or tip them an extra $20. Whatever it is, I try my best to convey value silently. And when that happens, the other person feels good, but it makes me feel good. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we were going into Barnes and Noble. We were going into Barnes and Noble, and an elderly woman was leaving, and I was going in one of the doors. I actually backtracked to make certain that I could hold the door for her so she could feel good. And she was beaming that somebody would actually take a moment in her, you know, in her slow walking life to be able to hold the door and make her feel good about it.
What's cool about that also, you probably didn't do this on for this reason, but you were with your 9-year-old daughter, Gabrielle.
Yeah.
And so she's watching that and you're setting an example for her of A, how you should treat elderly people, and B, how you should just be like a kind, giving person in your life.
Right. Now, I don't hammer the fact that I just did an act of kindness. I let her see it and let it sink in. She'll remember it much better than if I try to lecture her about it. It's much better to show than it is to tell.
Oh, absolutely. Same with your clients. Why don't you show them your appreciation rather than just sending them like a thank you note, which, by the way, people do not do enough anymore.
I don't disagree with that, Jen. I think those lazy bastards don't write a thank you note.
So this is sort of funny. My friend Katie and her husband Spencer went to my grandparents' house a couple of years ago for one of the Jewish holidays. And after the dinner, you know, they wrote my grandparents a thank you note saying, thanks so much for having us. It was lovely, blah, blah, blah. So I'm talking to my grandma. She's like, hey, I need Katie's address. I'm sending her a letter. I said, oh, okay, cool, sure. So I give it to her. I go, what are you sending her? She goes, I'm sending her a thank you note for sending me a thank you note.
Thank you. Thank you.
That's a definite dinger.
It was amazing because my grandma, who was a card person and loved to receive
cards. She was a cardiologist.
Her cards were crazy amazing, but like she could not believe how people no longer send thank you cards in the mail. And she was so touched by my friend's thank you note that she sent a thank you note to thank her. Like, think about how your customers feel when they do a big deal from you and then you walk away because the person who needs to handle the account is now on it. Where's your appreciation?
Yeah, I appreciate. Now, let me share something with you because you see this all the time. You see the MasterCard commercials where they say priceless, and it always has something to do with the smiling kid or helping somebody. If you think price versus priceless when you're talking to a customer, the difference between what it costs to do business with you and the value that you provide, the value is the priceless part. And you have to be able to convey that priceless part in order to be able to win the justification for the price part. Mm-hmm. I think that's the easiest way to be able to make it happen. So I'm going to be delivering some priceless information around the country. Chicago, Philadelphia, Atlanta, and Dallas. I love Dallas, except for the Cowboys. And I want to make sure we're tickets are really starting to sell right now. I want to get as many diehards there. We're going to be doing some element of podcast there, certainly talking about it. We are very grateful for your attendance at these things, and they are going to rock. You're going to totally love the leadership seminar and a sales seminar. Go to cgitomer. You'll see it in the notes. SEEGITOMER.com. And buy a ticket for you, your customers, your coworkers, everybody you know, both your friends.
I want to meet you there, so just show up, guys.
Well, okay,
get
cool.
your ticket
oh,
first.
Oh, you want to meet? You were looking right at me.
Get
I
your you ticket to... first, then show up.
Okay, cool. And we got books coming out. We have all kinds of things happening. I would really recommend, as far as doing things to for self-aggrandizement purposes, get Truthful Living, please. Just go to Amazon and click on the Buy Now button. Get yourself a hardbound copy. It will help you in life, and it will help you understand who you are and where you're growing. Not where you're going, where you're growing. So I'm... Yeah, Jenny?
Well, I just wanted to let everyone know what's coming up this week. We have a really good lineup. We have our Sell or Die Extra on Wednesday, and then we have Master Marketer Alan McKenna on Thursday. And then, of course, we have our Best Of on Friday. So it's time, Jeffrey, to make that reminder.
Get out there and sell something. Oh, I'm Jeffrey Gittimer, by the way, and you are?
Jen Gluckow.
And I'm reminding you to get out there and sell something even if your ass falls off.
Sell or Diehards. If you love the show, make sure you've subscribed.
And if you've subscribed, make sure you rate us on iTunes or give us a star on Overcast.
And if you've done all of that, tell a friend about the best sales podcast on the planet. Or better yet, tell both your friends.
And if you've done all of that, well, you're a true sell or diehard. And we thank you.